Coming up on the Social Hour, we're joined by Aaron Harris of TutorSpree.com, plus a new social network from Microsoft. Do you want it? Do you have room for it? The best of Twitter delivered to your inbox on a weekly digest. And Ryan Gosling is a coffee table book. All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 62, recorded Monday, May 21st, 2012. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Ford, featuring all-electric and hybrid electric technologies. Learn more about the technologies Ford is bringing to its vehicles at Ford.com/technology. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Social Hour from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Hey, Sarah.
Hello, Amber. How are you?
I am doing very well. I can't complain. It's, almost summertime in Toronto, so that's always good. And enjoying the weather. I can actually say that.
It's funny. Our weather it's pretty nice in Petaluma right now. It's not as summery as it's been over the last week or so, but that's actually good because I don't really like hot weather. So this is perfect for me. If it's foggy in San Francisco, I'm good to go. No, anybody who's watching our show live, we're actually recording this a week ahead of schedule because Memorial Day falls on a Monday when we would normally record this show. So if you're watching us live, you get a bonus. You're kind of like living in the future right now. And if you're watching us on demand, then hopefully you appreciate the fact that we gave you a show on at least a national holiday in the U.S. Without further ado, Amber, we have a great guest today. Aaron Harris, the founder of TutorSpree, is joining us, and let's bring him into the conversation now. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Great. Thank you for joining us. I should say that Aaron was recommended by Alexis from Reddit. I sent him an email and said, hey, do you know anyone awesome who should come on the show? And he recommended Aaron, so that's pretty good, Aaron.
Yeah, I don't know if that's praise I want to live up to or run away from. But Alexis sits in our office a lot of the time here in New York, so we've gotten to know him pretty well. And he's been a good advisor and investor, so all kinds of great things for TutorSpree.
That's awesome. Alexis was a guest of ours back in the earlier days of the Social Hour, Amber, and since then I've become kind of a real admirer of his online life because I didn't realize that he knows everybody in the whole world. Now that I know a little bit more about him, I realize that he's a very cool person to suggest other guests for us. So thanks, yes, Amber, for doing that, and thanks, Aaron, for being game to be on the show and telling us a little bit more about TutorSpree.
Yeah, so TutorSpree is kind of a product born out of our own experiences and a necessity that we saw in friends and colleagues and parents around us. Essentially, people were looking for tutors and people were looking to get tutored, and no one knew how to find a good one. You know, I had that experience in high school. I needed an SAT tutor. It ended up being my best friend's aunt. She was great, but that was a pretty random process. And so what we decided to do was use the power of this magical thing called the internet and really start building a network of incredibly high quality tutors that people could then, you know, come and find anything they need. And, you know, we have everything from, you know, fifth grade math tutors to computer science tutors, all sorts of really great stuff. And we have over 8,000 tutors, not that many in Petaluma, unfortunately.
Well, it's a small town, so we forgive you for that.
But, you know, here in New York, we have thousands of people available covering all kinds of really normal and esoteric subjects. And the range of people that we have coming to work with our students and our tutors is just really, really awesome. In the last week, we've gotten requests from Cyprus, from Georgia, not the state, from Dubai, and then all over the U.S. itself.
You know, when I became familiar with TutorSpree, I live in San Francisco, which has a pretty good network of tutors available in a variety of subjects. I went ahead and added my zip code, and then I filtered via, I think, language, which is one of the areas over on the left-hand side where I can say, okay, I'm interested in learning something language-based because, as Amber knows, I'll be visiting France next month. And I really don't know French very well at all, but I'm very keen to learn a little bit more. And I found a few people right away that would be perfect tutors for me. You know, they're either living here originally from France or they have dual citizenship. They're certainly bilingual. And they seem great. You know, you've got a little bio about the person. In many cases, these people have really, really good credentials. I mean, they went to, you know, Ivy League schools, and they've got master's degrees, and it's like, wow, how are all of these people, how do they all have the free time to be tutors? Because they're, you know, this is not just sort of like, oh, I'm sitting around, and maybe I could teach you a little bit of French. They are highly skilled people.
Yeah, and I think part of that is really a comment almost on what's going on in the broader economy for a lot of people. I mean, unemployment in the U.S. is above 8%. You have a lot of very highly qualified, highly employable people who do not have full-time jobs, unfortunately. And so what we've done is created a way for them to make money on the side. You know, we have some tutors making thousands of dollars a month thanks to TutorSpree, thanks to clients that they've been matched up with. And that's something that we're really proud of. But, you know, it's in some ways a situation I wish didn't exist. Because it would mean higher employment. But then you also have a lot of full-time tutors, people who do this as a living, do this professionally. You know, in New York, you have tutors charging $1,000 an hour in some places for some subjects. So pays better than being a lawyer for some people.
That's amazing. Now, my first reaction when I saw the service was what a fantastic idea. Also thinking about the process of vetting some of the people, because you're dealing with a couple of things here. One is oftentimes you're dealing with young people, children, for example, who may need a tutor. And in most cases, I'm guessing that the tutor would come into a person's home, especially if it's a child. How do you ensure that that whole process is safe?
Yeah, so what we do is essentially take a look at every single profile that comes into the site. Every single applicant we actually hand review and say, okay, does this smell right? You know, we have an internal rubric as sort of learning over the course of admitting over 8,000 tutors to the site. We've kind of developed some internal heuristics around what looks like a good tutor, what looks like a bad tutor. And so once we review their profiles, put them live, ask questions as follow-up if necessary, then we have a conversation with them before matching them up with a student. And if they don't pass that test, they don't get through. If they do pass all those tests and, you know, the parent says, well, you know, I still want a background check or something, we can easily run that with the tutor's consent, with the parent's consent, and, you know, work through that way. But what we've seen is that, you know, we focus on very high quality areas of tutors or of likely sources of tutors just to start with, because we know how important quality is overall. You don't want an okay tutor. You want a spectacular tutor. And, you know, so Sarah, when you mentioned how there were a lot of tutors with great credentials, virtually all of our tutors have spectacular credentials. They seem to be vastly overqualified for what they're doing. You know, all that said, at the end of the day, even the best tutor in general might not be the best tutor for you. And that's why every time we match a student up with a tutor, we tell them, you know, if you're not completely satisfied after this first hour, you let us know and we'll either match you up with a brand new tutor free of charge or give you a refund. Because at the end of the day, we're dealing with something really important. We're dealing with the education of children. And we want to make sure that everyone has the absolute best experience they possibly can.
Do you find that most of the people who need tutoring or who come to TutorSpree are children? I mean, obviously, I would be learning at a child level in French, but not a child. But who's most of the market for?
Yeah, most of the market is not necessarily children, you know, not 10-year-olds, but mostly high school kids, a little bit of middle school. And that makes sense for us because that's what we focused on initially. That was the core market that we targeted. You know, if you look at the overall pie of tutoring in the United States, people are spending in excess of $5 billion on it. That's $100 billion worldwide. So we're not talking a small, little, tiny thing. Most of that is in kind of that high school, middle school area. But we're starting to see something really interesting, which is that college students are coming to us before exams that they have and saying, oh my God, I need an Orgo 302 tutor. I have no idea how to find one. There's nothing on campus. What do I do? And we're finding tutors for those people. And we have, you know, associates at venture capital funds coming and saying, hey, I really want to learn to program. Can I get some help? Yeah, you can absolutely get help with that. So it's become more broad-based than we initially expected, but our core is still definitely in that kids area, I guess, academic tutoring for students.
Now, I imagine as the service continues to gain more popularity, that a big part of it will be the recommendations and the reviews that people give tutors. Because I know for some of the tutors, it seems like they don't necessarily have reviews. Their credentials look great. But that underlying component, will that be a big boost to the service when you get more and more people using it and recommendations?
Yeah, absolutely. So we track every lesson that happens in the system, and that functions as an implicit recommendation for each tutor, and it feeds into our matching algorithm that we use. And then the reviews themselves, obviously, as people get them, feed in and give individual tutors a big boost. But that's something we're always trying to, you know, grow faster, better. The more reviews you have, the better it is. I mean, the way most people find their tutors now is a mix of Craigslist, flyers on telephone poles, and, you know, word of mouth. And our goal is to break that cycle, essentially create a trusted place where people are finding really, really special tutors that they know they can trust. And that's a mixture of, you know, the individual tutors and our overall brand.
I think it's amazing when you look through, again, to go back to these very good credentials that so many people featured on Tutor Spree have. It's wonderful that I might have access to this computer science whiz who knows all sorts of skills that I don't and could sit down and teach me a thing or two. The fact that he or she has the time indicates to me, well, you know, are they, you know, out of work or, you know, for whatever reason, nobody is tapping into all of the knowledge they have because they have time to tutor me. Great for the tutoree, but it definitely shows how much highly skilled people don't necessarily have full-time jobs in this day and age and economy.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, and it's not something that has any short-term fix. I mean, obviously, Washington is talking a lot and thinking about a lot about jobs and how to create more of them, but there's no short-term fix for that. Our economy is going through a very, very large shift in how it's oriented, and education is a big piece of that, both in terms of how well people are educated and what types of education they have. But the fact is right now that, you know, if you are if you're a high school student looking to get into college, it's gotten 40% harder to get into an Ivy League school in the last 10 years, which is when I got into my Ivy League school. That's astonishing, and it's a rate that's continuing. The most restrictive acceptance rate in the world, in the country, I think, is kind of surprisingly the 92nd Street Y nursery school. yeah. And people, by the way, are getting their kids tutored for the entrance exam.
Wow.
That's so disturbing.
Yeah, it's crazy, but I'm with you. But, you know, you look at the demographics, you have an increasingly large number of people wanting to get a great education because it's seen as the way to get a job. It's increasingly hard to do that. And there are limited spots, unfortunately, at our universities, at our high schools.
This also seems almost a... go ahead, Amber.
No, Sarah, go ahead.
It seems like a great way... Somebody in chat brought up Scott88008 in chat brought up some experts make terrible tutors as they can't handle why the student has difficulty with something. And I agree. I mean, I think we've all tried to explain something to someone that we get. You know, math is a great example. It's like, no, don't you see? It just makes sense. And the person's going, no, I don't get it. It's like you're speaking another language. That it would be a great way to kind of test the waters as far as being a teacher full time. If somebody was interested in saying, listen, I know what I'm talking about here. Can I explain it to you? And we're both having kind of a good time. You might get some teachers out of this, which is sorely needed.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. We actually have a lot of teaching students as tutors on the site. A couple of whom have listed sort of their experience as tutors on Tutor Spree as you know, something of a reference and saying, hey, look, I've tutored kids one-on-one, which is sometimes the hardest thing to do to really make sure someone gets that, you know, that understanding and that experience. And at the end of the day, that's part of why getting reviews and feedback is so important, because again, you can have the most spectacularly knowledgeable person on the planet who ends up just not being a great tutor because they're either too far above the level of the student or they're just not good at explaining. And we've had that happen.
What about people who are in smaller cities? Because I know you cater right now to some of the larger urban areas. Can they expect that they could possibly have access to the service and tutors in their neighborhood soon?
Yeah, absolutely. So our tutors are really across the country, and we've set up students in all kinds of places. You know, little places on the peninsula in Michigan have sent tutors and students our way. you know, some of the cities in smaller parts of the country, or some of the smaller cities in the country, excuse me. But also one of the interesting things we're seeing, and it's not something we're focused on, but is the dynamic of this idea of online tutoring and people working with other students over Skype and things like that. And it's never something we've been focused on exclusively because we're of the belief that for the majority of students at this day and age, given technology, one-on-one in-person interactions is usually the preferred method. But there's an increasing percentage of people who feel really comfortable, who are web native in such a way that they're totally fine working with a student over Skype, you know, or with a teacher over Skype using screen share, things like that. And that's really opening things up in terms of what we can supply. For instance, we have a seventh grader in Alexandria, Virginia, who wants to take Python, which is a little unusual, though we see more of it than I expected. And the truth is we don't have any really high-quality computer science tutors in Alexandria over the course of the summer. And I didn't want to disappoint the parents, so I said, hey, well, why don't we do something along the lines of setting you up with a tutor on Skype? And, you know, they're going to go ahead with it and give it a shot and see how it works. And it might not, right? It's not for everyone. But for a lot of students and for an increasing number of students, it's a really spectacular way to find that education, that supplemental education that they're looking for.
One last question for me, Amber, you might have another one as well. How do you get the word out to people who would be good tutors but might not be familiar with Tutor Spree yet?
We have a lot of different methods. One of them is coming on awesome, awesome shows like this.
good answer.
I know where my bread is buttered. We have a lot of different tactics, actually, where we go after and build relationships with things like graduate schools, teachers' organizations, and those are sort of how we get the pot started. And now we see a lot of tutors referring their friends. Tutors tend to know each other. They're either teachers or what have you, and they have a great experience with us, and they tell someone, and that's a great way to do it. And then also, you know, your standard online tools of being searchable, right? You know, getting written up in great places and really having a strong reputation. And so that's a lot of what we think about and a lot of how we go through the process of making sure that we're constantly stocked with great tutors and are constantly adding new ones.
Very cool. Well, I think it's an amazing service. I'm sure you're going to get lots of requests. What's your sort of dream vision for where things are going to go with the service and how it's going to grow?
You know, I want to be the place where everyone goes to find the one-on-one learning experience that they're looking for. If you look at the state of our education system right now, there are so many thousands and probably millions and millions of people who are feeling underserved by it, who are feeling that they want to learn something that just isn't available to them economically or, you know, but by virtue of distance or availability or whatever. And I want to solve that problem. I want, you know, someone in the middle of Iowa who wants to learn Italian, who has no Italian speakers within 1,000 miles of them, you know, I want to help them. I want to help the kids who are, you know, maybe in the Bronx who can't afford the $1,000 an hour tutors that are on the Upper East Side to find a really spectacular tutor at a rate that makes sense to them. Everyone's trying to learn something right now. And there's a lot of different models being tried. And, you know, that idea of having that one-on-one experience is something that goes back thousands and thousands of years. It's where I've had my best interactions as a student, and I want that to be something that everyone has access to, and not just access to a cheap approximation of a great experience, but really has a phenomenal experience.
How is pricing set? We're getting a few questions from people saying, you know, do the tutors decide I'm going to charge $50 an hour or $300 an hour or $10 an hour? Do you give them some recommendations on what's realistic and reasonable?
Yeah, we give the tutors sort of recommendations, you know, or sort of set as they, if they want, we can let them know essentially what a proper rate is or what it is. But our tutors set their own rates, and we try to fill that for them. And as parents call in, we discuss with them sort of what is appropriate and based on, you know, what they need and all those kinds of things. There's variables. And then, you know, if the rate ends up working out, we'll let tutors know. And if they're too high, we'll let them know. If they're too low, we'll let them know they can make a little more.
Love it. Very cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and good luck with everything.
Thanks very much, Amber.
Aaron Harris, founder of Tutor Spree. You can check out Tutor Spree and see if there are tutors in your area, or if you are an expert in a particular field or even a few different ones, definitely go to tutorspree.com and learn a little bit more about the service. It might be the place for you. Thanks again, Aaron.
Thanks, Sarah. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Have a great week. A quick reminder to everybody that is watching us, they may not be watching us live because we're actually recording at kind of a funny time since we're accommodating for Memorial Day on May 28th in the U.S., that we record live on Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, most Mondays. Every once in a while, we'll throw you a curveball. But that's
switch
usually
it up.
Yeah, when you can watch us live. But if you ever miss a live show or you want to go back and you remember that there was a guest and they had this cool website and, ooh, you didn't write it down and now how are you going to find that information? All of that stuff lives on our website at twit.tv/TSH. All of Amber and my interviews, our discussions, and all of the links associated with those live here. It is our mothership of information. And it's a lot of fun, if I do say so myself. Each episode has the embedded video right there, and all of our show notes to links of everything that we talked about. So you can always go back, review information, follow along, and make sure that you don't miss a show. All of our subscription links to our audio and video feeds are there as well. So you can subscribe to the show, and then you don't even have to worry about when we're shooting it and if we're taking the week off, because episodes will be delivered directly to you. So, okay, before we go on to some of our news from the week, we should probably take a moment to thank Ford for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. I always love it when Ford sponsors our shows because it's fun for me to talk about all the technology that Ford has in their cars, because they're so above and beyond what everybody else is doing right now, that it's just, you know, it's like magic, really. A couple of vehicles that Ford technology really shines as far as electric technologies go is the 2012 Ford Focus Electric and the 2013 C-Max Energy Plug-in Hybrid. Both models have a braking system which captures, this is great, over 90% of kinetic energy that in a regular old engine would be lost to heat due to friction. So this is making use of energy, man. We don't want energy to just get lost into the ether. We actually want to bring it back into the car to make use of it. It's like recycling. Also, a suite of driver information systems on board and off board, which is really cool. You don't actually have to be sitting in the car. This is stuff that you can access before you get back into the car to monitor your battery state. How much battery life do I have left? What would be the route that's the most eco-friendly so that I make sure that I'm not using energy that I don't need to use, that sort of thing. Both cars have sync with MyFord Touch. That's driver connect technology. So electrified driving for configuring car information like your fuel level, your battery power level. I mean, when you've got an electric car, that is of the utmost importance. Average and instant miles per gallon. So you can see, interesting. This, you know, I've been driving in the city quite a bit. Boy, I get more miles per the gallon when I have this more direct route, even maybe if I go a little bit around about. All that stuff really factors into your experience, especially when you've got an electrically powered car. There's also the MyFord mobile smartphone app. So again, you can access information in a variety of ways right from your phone, vehicle status, program charge settings. You can download your vehicle data for analysis. I mean, it's the perfect for a person who likes to sort of be obsessed with statistics. And when when you've got a neat car, then of course you want to do stuff like that. Both the availability of the 2012 Ford Focus Electric is available for reservations now. So you can absolutely 100% reserve your Ford Focus for 2012. And then the 2013 Ford C-Max Energy Plug-in Hybrid is coming in the fall of 2013. So hey, you know, maybe you think I've got a year and some change. Might be time. You've got a little bit of time to go ahead and save up for your new Ford. Now, there's a lot of technology that we just talked about. I don't expect you to remember it all, but I hope that if you're interested, you'll go to Ford.com/technology and take a closer look at all of the tech that Ford is putting into their vehicles. It is really mind-blowing, but it's very exciting because you see eventually how cars are all going to act. Ford just happens to be kind of at the forefront of all of this. So looking for a new car? you might want to look at Ford. And again, you can see all of the tech in greater detail, videos and explanations and all sorts of good stuff at Ford.com/technology. All right, Amber, let's talk a little bit about some of the newsworthy social stories of the week.
Yeah, this is an interesting one, considering that on our previous episode, we had one of the guys from Shopify on the Social Hour to talk about the social shopping experience and how far that's come. And based on this article talking about fab.com, they've kind of turned up the dial on the social shopping features that they're offering on their service in terms of more integration with Facebook and other services. Also, Sarah, this is kind of neat. In December, I didn't realize this, they launched a real-time live feed so people could see what others were buying. This reminds me a little bit of some of those services that I think both of us were signed up for in the past, talking about sharing every purchase you made, but it looks like it's having a comeback of sorts.
Oh yeah, I think maybe you're talking about Blippi.
Blippi, that's what I was thinking about. Exactly.
Blippi, which did not stand the test of time.
It did not.
But it was certainly an interesting concept, and yeah, it's interesting. I'm trying to get my sale page to load here at Fab right now. For whatever reason, my page is loading extremely slowly, but as it loads, I'll try to explain what's neat about Fab and fab.com. By the way, we've talked about it on the show in the past, I think. Certainly on Twitch shows in the past, I've talked about it. So hopefully it was this one as well. But it's a place to buy stuff. I mean, it's a curated marketplace, really, of cool things. So artwork, furniture, jewelry, apparel, that sort of stuff. What's interesting about Fab is it's not so much just a place like an Etsy, I guess, where it's a service that anybody could join and sell through. Fab would actually choose, okay, you've got some great stuff. We're going to work with you, and we're going to offer your collection as a sale for a week, that sort of thing. Anybody who's familiar with Gilt, Gilt Group, it works a little bit like that. So Fab, for example, some new sales here include really interesting cufflinks, municipal railway stuff. Looks pretty cool to me. There's some artwork here. Looks like there's some pillows, and this stuff rotates in and out depending on, oh yeah, oh boy, you're seeing some Chrome crashes here. My poor video card, it really doesn't like it when I have this many tabs open. But Fab is great. So here's what Fab has started to do. If I go to my feed here, upper left-hand corner, I see a little number 3. Well, it's different. Let's open up my feed. Since I was here last, because I'm signed in through Facebook Connect, all of the purchasing information from those friends of mine on Facebook are delivered to me in a real-time feed. And apologies again that this is loading so slowly. For example, I'm looking at everybody who's in the real-time feed, but I could filter via my friends. And so if Amber was to buy a pair of shoes at fab.com, as long as she wanted her information to be in the news feed, she has the option of stripping that out, I would see that. And if as long as she let Fab add purchasing information to her Facebook feed, I could see that in my news feed as well, that Amber just bought these shoes. Now, it's not just buying. She might have wanted something or liked something. So it's a little bit of like, ooh, too much information for some people. And I'm using the example of shoes because last week I was checking out this feed and I ended up buying some shoes because obviously it works. And Tom Merritt was like, oh, nice shoes. And I was like, how do you know? Oh, yeah. I shared that publicly via Facebook. And there's like a little picture of the shoes. And I thought, this could either be good because then Tom won't buy the same shoes as me, or bad if Tom wants to copy me and then he gets the same shoes that I just bought. And I didn't want him to know. I just wanted to show up with these awesome shoes. Pretend like, you know.
A little competitive, are we, Sarah?
Right, exactly. You know, oh, I got them at this little store. It doesn't exist anymore. You can't get them. Last pair. So, but this is a really good way that Fab makes use of Facebook. Maybe Facebook's next purchase, although they did just get a bunch of money from a Japanese company, which is a whole nother conversation. But I like the real-time news feed. I'm into it.
Yeah, I think it's neat. I mean, I think the whole social shopping experience has clearly exploded. And it's not as though it's a new thing where we base our shopping purchases on what our friends want. We've been doing the word of mouth system for so long, right? So it just puts it in the digital perspective. So I think it's kind of cool too. But yeah, the good thing is you can opt out of it if you don't like it, because there will be people who don't like that element of sharing within a service like that.
Yeah, there is something about... So this is great. So my friend Emily, she works at Foodsy. So these shoes that she just bought are similar to the shoes that I bought. Same company. They're a different pattern. But I wonder if, because we're Facebook friends as well, I wonder if she saw that I bought these shoes and went, oh, cute. I won't get the exact same shoes as Sarah. I'll get something kind of similar because I like, I like the look in general. There's something about, the power of someone either favoriting or buying something where you go, oh, that's cool. Okay. I trust their good judgment, especially when it comes to stuff like this, because you know that Fab has already, there's a commitment to quality, that something that's on Fab was already good because the people at Fab have looked through it and said, yes, we absolutely want to feature you. So it's just another way to have the power of social integrated into our purchasing decisions.
Speaking of social, Sarah, there is a new social network, and this one was created by Microsoft. It's called Social, but SO.CL. And I'm just trying to wrap my head around exactly what this social network does. I know you can sign in with Facebook, and I think the idea is more about exploration as far as basing your search within this network on your different set of interests that you have. So I don't know about you, Sarah, but I always get a little nervous when I hear about a social network first through some type of news site versus seeing my friends using it. And I think this falls into that category.
Yeah. I hate to be cynical about this stuff, but when I see Microsoft has launched a social network and it's SO.CL, which is like, okay, I get it. It sort of looks like it says social, but it's creatively leaving a lot of letters out. I just sort of sigh and think, ugh, come on. And now that's not necessarily fair, because it could be great. But I wonder how much, oh gosh, I don't know. It's hard for me to talk about this, because then it just sounds like I'm bagging on Microsoft as a company. And that's not it at all. I just feel like Microsoft is one of these big companies that's not necessarily first, but can throw a lot of money at a project. So with, we're looking at a little video of all the things that this social network from them is capable of. And I automatically think, oh, they're just trying to like give us their version of Google Plus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does feel a little bit like that. Especially the look and feel is a tiny bit similar to Google Plus. I feel the same way. I hesitate when I haven't heard anyone through any other platform talk about it, but it just ends up on a news site where I dive into it a little bit. But who knows? Maybe it will have its place in the social networking world. It seems as though there are plenty of other social networks that have found their own communities, but I worry a little bit about this one, because it seems to be a very broad audience that they're trying to reach. Whereas I think in some ways, the future of social networks is actually a little more niche. We'll see. We'll keep an eye on this one.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Amber. It's like we've sort of already got Facebook that is the proven model for the social network for everybody. Like no matter what you're into, who your friends are, whatever, Facebook can work for you. And Google Plus kind of had its work cut out for it when it launched, because it's like, huh, ooh, interesting. Here's an alternative to Facebook that is also for everybody. Works a little bit differently, but from now until one of the projects fails, it's like they will always be compared to each other. So if Microsoft comes in and says, okay, I'm going to throw my hat in the ring, here's our social network, then it's like, it's a very much of a Me Too kind of thing. And sure, just because you can't be first doesn't mean that you shouldn't try, especially when it's a market that people clearly need and want. But it makes it, the more the market is diluted, the harder it is for anybody to catch up, especially with Facebook, just because almost the whole planet is already on Facebook.
Almost the whole planet, pretty much. Speaking of the whole planet, Sarah, this is pretty interesting, the article you found about YouTube and how much video content we're actually uploading. It's phenomenal to think users uploading 72 hours of video every single minute?
Oh, my gosh. The mind boggles. Every once in a while, we get these crazy statistics from YouTube. 72 hours of video every minute. I mean, think about that for a second. That is unreal, the amount of content that's going up to YouTube just, you know, in a 24-hour period, just one day. I mean, so many hours of video. Now, of course, you think, well, some of this is high-quality stuff. YouTube is more and more being known for, you know, episodic stuff, reoccurring, highly produced content. So, Twit content goes up to YouTube. I mean, they're not breaking down what kind of video is being uploaded to YouTube. So a lot of it is high-quality shows, like our little show here. And a lot of it is everything else. For example, if I want to find, you know, a clip off of some, you know, television show, I mean, it'll be there probably 20 different times from someone who held up a camera phone to the TV, and maybe it'll be up there for like a day or so before they get some sort of a takedown notice and it goes away. But I mean, there's a lot of stuff that gets uploaded to YouTube that's not necessarily legal, not necessarily permanent. And then there's kind of a lot of the silly stuff that you upload just to, you know, show somebody a little video here or there. So the wide range of video is obviously very wide indeed. But still, it's amazing that that YouTube is able to handle this, yeah, even on their servers.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. I was just looking on your YouTube page. I was trying to figure out if there was an embarrassing first video that you uploaded it when you started on YouTube, but I couldn't see anything too embarrassing, Sarah.
No, I kind of use YouTube as like a test bed. So if I'm playing around with a, you know, an iPad app or something that is video filters, sometimes I'll just quickly upload it to YouTube just to see what it looks like in its final form, just to make sure that the upload process works correctly. But I don't really have a YouTube account that I use regularly. I mean, we obviously have the Social Hour and our other shows that are available on YouTube. And if you search for us, there's me. Oh, I was reviewing something for Before You Buy, one of our other shows on Twit. But, you know, you'll find the stuff. But no, I don't feel like I really have time to be working on my own YouTube account. But maybe that's just because I'm not trying hard enough, because people are also making money with, you know, with advertising and revenue share with I want to say Facebook, with YouTube as well.
But I think you have to dedicate a lot of time to it, right? It's a lot of effort. As soon as you get into kind of producing your own video, as many of us know, it takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of bandwidth. Sorry, not to make another silly joke, but it definitely does. It's not that easy. All right, Sarah. So our next up on our list of things to talk about is our social tip. This is a really simple one in terms of something that you may use. It's from Twitter. Soon Twitter will be able to send you the best of Twitter to your inbox. And this is kind of a neat idea. If there are people you follow and there are people who produce content and links that are really popular, eventually that could come in an email digest to you, a weekly email digest, and you'll be able to kind of sift through that to see the latest and greatest. And this is good for someone like me, Sarah, who has ended up maybe following too many people, and sometimes I miss stuff. So I do like this idea. It's hard to say when this will be released, but it says over the next few weeks, you can keep an eye on your inbox for a message from Twitter, and they'll let you know when you can go into your preferences and set it up so you do get this digest. So I like this idea, a simple little thing that you can use again to just have a different view of all the Twitter content that's coming to you.
Yeah, Reverb Mike in chat says, I don't need more stuff in my inbox. And my first reaction is totally agree with you, Reverb Mike. Yeah. I don't want emails from anyone ever. I mean, unless it's like there's a question that needs my answer. It's like digests and things like that, I always opt out of. I had already received my best of Twitter, which is something that I did opt out of just because my first reaction was no more emails. However, Amber does make a good point. There are days where, I mean, we've been doing the Social Hour two episodes back to back today, where it's like, I mean, I'm already quite behind on Twitter because I follow enough people that so much information comes in that if I'm not constantly reading Twitter throughout the day at regular intervals, I just lose chunks of what might have been very interesting links and information and that sort of stuff. So a weekly digest could really help, especially if it's like I check in when I check in and I don't want to worry too much about the stuff I missed, because that stuff will, as long as this works out well, end up in my best of Twitter over the last week, which I guess, Amber, has to do with how many times something was retweeted. Maybe a person had tweeted a link to something, and that person and me have a lot of mutual friends in common. I assume there are probably a lot of variables to why I would get my weekly digest, which would be different than your weekly digest or different than Brian's weekly digest. But it's good if you feel like you can't keep up otherwise.
I think weekly is good too, right? I think that's the key thing. I wouldn't want this daily. I think, like you said, it just adds to your inbox, and like you, I'm always trying to manage my inbox, which is totally out of control right now. But I think weekly I could handle it. It might just bring up some of that stuff that perhaps that I missed, and also help me with putting messages on Twitter to understand what works better, at least within my own community, and kind of what stories rise to the top. So a simple thing that you can turn on and turn off if you don't like it. And also just a quick message. I know Nicole is watching right now, and no, I did not sneeze, although I was very close.
Really? I missed that whole thing. It was like a... That sort of thing.
I looked into the light, Sarah, when you weren't looking. I looked into the light because I heard that helps you not sneeze. And if for anyone who doesn't know what I'm talking about, I have a tendency to sneeze on the show, and it's well documented on YouTube.
Yes, it's true. In fact, was it Jessica Scorpio that sneezed during our interview with her last week?
Good.
Somebody. And I was sort of like, aha, see, it's the show.
It's the sneeze
somehow
show.
Exactly. It's the show. You know, I have heard, Amber, that if you have to sneeze and you're kind of like on that edge, which is a very uncomfortable place to be, you're supposed to look at the light and it will help you sneeze. I have never heard that it will help you suppress your sneeze.
Oh.
Maybe it's just one of those things, almost like hiccups, where if you just concentrate on something else, it sort of just corrects itself.
Yeah.
And it's not so much about the light. It's about that, you know, you're trying really hard to move past.
I don't know. Oh, and then the sneeze montage. Here we go. Oh, yes. So for our audio listeners, yes, we're just watching a little fun video of me sneezing. I think I was actually sick during that episode, but nonetheless, yes, have been known to sneeze a lot, but not today, Sarah.
Nope.
There'll be no sneezes today.
Well, we're not done with the show yet. You've got time.
That's a good point. Oh, no. Now I'm thinking about it. All right. So for our spotlight this week, for people who love Instagram, and I know there are a lot of you out there, this is a neat site that I hadn't heard about before. It's not run by Instagram, but it's a community for people who love Instagram and want to come together and share ideas about how to better use Instagram and build communities around the service. It's called Instagrammers, a pretty obvious name, and really just a beautiful site featuring some of the latest work from people who are posting on Instagram from different cities. It's got a very international focus as well. So a fun one for this week's spotlight.
I love this. This is sort of like, it's kind of like curated content from a very large network of people that might seem overwhelming on its own. You get You get introduced to interesting people that you might want to follow. And this is the site is really nice too.
It's very well done. And if you go into the cities portion of the site, you'll see that there are more than 268 Instagrammer groups worldwide. Phenomenal. So many countries. And I know we have people listening from all different parts of the world. And chances are you can find an Instagram group in your country or somewhere nearby. So fun to see all of these groups listed here. And just a really vibrant community that someone has put together around the popularity of Instagram.
I love that. You know, it's funny. I tend to follow a lot of people who also live in my neighborhood, I mean my city, San Francisco, because I'm just following a lot of my friends who I hang out with in real life. But it's really fun for me to see a lot of pictures of places that I'm familiar with, and obviously Instagram is so good for that. But it would also be, I'm looking through the country list also, it's like, you know, I'm talking about going to France. It's like, it might be kind of fun to follow some people who live or at least take a lot of pictures and post them from places that I'm interested in going to, that I've either been to and I feel nostalgic for, or I plan to, or I just want to learn more about it. That's a really great idea. I've never really thought of doing that before.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's neat too how they, some of these communities, they end up having their own vocabulary. So, you know, they talk on the site about organizing an Insta meet after an Insta walk. So there are all different terms that people use in the Instagram community. Mm-hmm. So people clearly really, really love this app and use it on a regular basis. And it has become more than just an app, but instead a real network of people.
Very cool. I love that. Instagrammers. And that's Instagrammers with one M.
One M.
Yeah. It looks like Instagrammers a little bit. Maybe the 2M version was taken, or maybe they just like the way it's spelled. Instagrammers.com. But if you're confused, we'll, of course, have that in our show notes. Amber, we got an email from Mark Wansill. He lives in Royal Oak, Michigan. And this is in reference to QR codes, I think. He thinks anyway that it was a rad or fad sometime back. I think he's right. He says, yep. I know that quick response codes or QR codes appeared in a rad or fad a while ago and you thought it was rad. Anywho, somebody was bound to get clever with them. And then he says, hat tip to Smashing Magazine, which is probably where he found this link. Brian, if you pull up this link, it's almost a, well, how do I explain it? It's an interesting explanation of how QR codes work, enough so that there's a certain amount of information in QR codes. Always kind of look the same, you know. It's sort of a mishmash of black and white, and it's not particularly good looking. But it's like the QR code only needs to have so much information there, and as long as there's enough information there, the scan will work because you're taking data out of, you know, this scanned QR code. So there's a, it's like a how to embed an image within the QR code, but still have the QR code work. So it's like, okay, you can embed an image of, you know, the British flag, you know, or like a, it looks like a little, I don't know, a chipmunk or something, or someone's face or a bell. These are all QR codes that work. They're totally, they're legitimate QR codes, but you can have a little fun with them. It's almost like ASCII art, but it's the new modern version of how this works. A lot of this is pretty math-oriented, so it's not as if it's going to explain how to make your own customized QR code, but exactly how the data works within a QR code and how people are having a little bit of fun, at least making them a little bit more interesting than those standard black and white QR codes that look like everything else.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for sharing this, and I think we did have a really lively discussion on QR codes that lasted over a couple of episodes, where we got feedback from people talking about interesting ways that people were using QR codes. And there was some fun stuff, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, QR codes are definitely everywhere. And to me, I feel like it's like a bridge right now. It's this cool thing that isn't going to be around in another 10 years because, I don't know, we're going to come up with something better. But I was on Caltrain the other day. Actually, Caltrain is a public transportation system in the Bay Area that takes a lot of people to and from the South Bay into the city. And when you're leaving San Francisco, there's like an apartment building kind of right next to the train, and they've built this big wall where it's trying to, you know, keep people from having to look out their kitchen window at a bunch of train tracks. You know, they've got, you know, sort of a backyard, so there's this big wall. And somebody had painted a huge QR code on the side of the wall, like, I mean, larger than life. I mean, it's, you know, it's as high as the ceiling here. And it's great because at this point of the train, you're still leaving the city, so you're kind of going by it slowly before it picks up speed. And you actually have time to, like, scan it with your phone, even though it's not very close. It ends up being about the right size, almost as if you had something right in front of you, because it's this huge QR code on the side of a wall. It's really neat. But I thought,
that's very cool.
Yeah, I'm like, that's, you know, one day we're going to, someone will have a picture of this and people will go, what, really? You did that? That's so weird.
Crazy. Yeah. It's so funny. At the same time we're talking about QR codes, I was just kind of scanning my Facebook feed and noticed that someone had posted this article from Mashable that was just put up today talking about QR codes, saying, fill this glass with Guinness beer and get a QR code. So basically, this is a new marketing campaign where the only way this works, if you fill up the glass with a dark beer like Guinness and you see a QR code that you can scan, and it will check you into Foursquare and it will tweet about your pint of beer. You can update your Facebook status. I don't know what else it will do, but I guess they are not dead. They're alive and kicking, Sarah.
Yes, that's true. And Peroni in our chat room says, barcodes are still around, so I wouldn't be too pessimistic about QR codes. That is true. You are right. Barcodes. I mean, talk about an old school thing that just stays with us. I don't know. I mean, I think it's just the design that bothers me. They're so silly looking. That does look pretty cool, though.
Yeah, it does. It looks pretty cool with Guinness in it, I have to say. Yeah. I would agree with you.
For sure. All right. A reminder that we love hearing from all of you. We try to feature as much of your feedback on the show as humanly possible. And you have a variety of ways you can get a hold of us. TheSocialHour@twit.tv is our email address. Or you can leave us a voicemail, 2626-SOCIAL. That's 2626, S-O-C-I-A-L. It's a Google Voice voicemail inbox. Just send us a message. Anything you want to say, whether it's a question or comment, the way you feel about QR codes, whatever. We just like to hear from you. And if you're feeling brave, you can record a video, upload it somewhere like YouTube, be part of the 72 hours every minute, and send us the link for where the video lives, and we will try to feature it on the show as well. All right, Amber, this is the part of the show that everybody waits for. It's Rad Fad.
Sarah, this is a good one, and this is just for you, because I know you're a fan of Ryan Gosling, who isn't, and we talked a little while ago about that popular meme on Tumblr, a bunch of different pictures that were created, sort of a feminist Ryan Gosling who loved all the ladies and very positive towards women, of course. Mm-hmm. Hey, girl, yes. So it looks like, based on this meme, there is now an official book that has just come out by Danielle Henderson. Of course, it's unauthorized. It's called Feminist Ryan Gosling. As imagined feminist theory from your favorite sensitive movie dude. And it takes a lot of these pictures from Hey Girl and puts them into a beautiful book. And I have to say, Sarah, this is probably going to do pretty well.
I totally agree with you. This is the sort of book where, okay, so I'm a really big fan of Ryan Gosling. I love him. So if you gave me this book, it wouldn't even be a joke gift. It would be like, thank you, Amber. Pictures of Ryan Gosling. I love this. But this could also be just a great little coffee table book that, you know, it's good for a few laughs and then you put it away. But I love it. Hey, girl.
It's really, really funny. So a good gift for ladies or men out there who enjoyed the Tumblr blog, Hey Girl. So this is a keeper. And you know what? I know someone who I'm going to have to get this for, who is also a big fan of that Tumblr blog. And it looks like it's available for pre-order right now, as far as I can tell.
I'll
pre-order
anything.
On Amazon.
Anything at all.
Only $7. You can't go wrong.
That is $7 well spent. Ryan Gosling, no shirt, being sensitive.
And the publication date is August 14th, 2012, if you choose to mark your calendars.
I have a feeling that we've got a few people watching or listening to the show who's like, oh, gosh, you don't know me at all. I don't want this, but you know.
That's what happens, you know. Once in a while, we've said this before on the show, as you're used to men giving you all this tech information and news, you get two ladies. Once in a while, things seep in, like maybe new shoes or Ryan Gosling. You just have to accept it.
It's very true. So many of you might think this is 100% fad, and I would have to kind of agree. I mean, one day, this whole Ryan Gosling thing will be a thing of the past, because nothing lasts forever. But I feel like it's temporarily very rad.
It's very rad,
yes.
I think.
We're going through a phase. This is our rad phase for feminist Ryan Gosling.
Yep. I think it's rad for sure, Sarah.
Nice dissolve, Brian. That was very sensitive of you.
All we need is music now to end off the show in a very sentimental... Yeah.
I love how Tumblr specifically is like breeding ground for coffee table books. I swear.
Oh, yeah.
It's like you just have to have, you know, it's just like just some little funny hook and you will get a book deal. And we've seen,
I mean,
we've featured quite a few of them. Dear Photograph comes to mind as actually a really, really good concept that is an awesome book and well-deserved. A lot of this is sort of like you get a lot of hits to your website regularly. Well, someone's going to want to make a book with you before people move on to something else, you know, and everybody makes some money. So we definitely see a lot of this. But this is a book. Well, I mean, the trees died for a good cause here.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. But this is why the internet works, right? Because if someone had pitched this book to a big publisher and told them what it was all about, there's no way they would have been able to get a deal. But because it worked on the internet first, of course, it now could be a big success.
Absolutely.
We'll see.
feminist Ryan Gosling. So if you want to buy this book, you don't even have to admit it. It's cool. We'll just have the links in our show notes. You can quietly find the link to purchase. You don't have to tell anybody. We won't tell anybody. And you can enjoy your book in peace. I think on that note, Amber, before everyone turns us off, we'll go ahead and say that is it for this episode of The Social Hour. We came in at like 58 minutes, so we're right under the hour mark. And a reminder to everyone, we're taping this live at kind of a weird time to make up for the holiday next Monday. But normally we're live on Mondays, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. You can also find us online if you've missed us live, you want to subscribe to the show, you want to catch up on anything, you missed a link or two, and you want to make sure that you can visit all of that stuff. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. TSH for The Social Hour. You can find our show in iTunes as well. You can find us on YouTube. I mean, we make it pretty easy to keep up with the show. And thanks to everybody who watches us every week. All right, Amber, I'm going to let you go because it is a Canadian holiday today.
It is.
So now you know
when
we shot the show.
Oops. Yes, it is. Well, thank you very much, Sarah, and for everybody for listening and tuning in. And we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye, everybody.